The gospel is advancing and freedom is commencing. With leaping and with dancing, we'll hail the jubilee.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. On Saturday, August 19th, Shaker Museum Mount Lebanon will hold their annual gala. The event will include a performance featuring Frances McDormand, Suzy Roach, and Kate Valk, presenting an excerpt of the Worcester Group's Early Shaker Spirituals, a record album interpretation. The piece was originally performed in New York City in 2014. The Worcester Group is a New York City-based experimental theater company, and Frances McDormand has been an artistic associate and performer with the group for nearly 20 years. An accomplished performer for stage and screen, McDormand has earned a Tony Award, a Primetime Emmy, and an Academy Award, the latter for her portrayal of Police Chief Marge Gunderson in the Coen Brothers' 1996 film, Fargo. Frances McDormand, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you very much. Is it really round?
Sometimes. The one I'm at right now is not, but some of them are.
I love round tables, as did the Shakers.
Perfect segue. So I think the best place for us to start is for you to tell us about the Worcester Group, your work with them, and this piece you're excerpting at the Shaker Museum, Early Shaker Spirituals.
The Worcester Group is an avant-garde theater company that's been in existence for almost 40 years. The director of the group is Liz LeCompte, and their preeminent actress is Kate Valk, and they have switched roles for this piece, in fact. Our piece, Early Shaker Spirituals, a record album interpretation, was a kind of a brainchild of both Liz and Kate, and Kate decided she wanted to direct Liz as a performer in it. So this is the first time Liz has performed for quite some time. And it was also because Kate wanted to have five women on stage as the center of attention. And we just all happened to be over a certain age. I'm the youngest at 59, going on 60 this year. And I have to say it's really a powerful focal point for a theatrical piece. It's unusual to see five women live on stage, sitting still and holding the attention for an hour.
And the piece, it's based on a record album, as you said, and it isn't narrative. There isn't a story. There aren't necessarily characters. How does that type of avant-garde presentation appeal to you? What kind of a itch does that scratch in your performance?
I have to say that the work I've done with the Worcester Group, I guess I've worked with them since my son was 3 and he's now 22.
Mm-hmm.
It was a place where I was trained in the theater. I went to 4 years of undergraduate and then 3 years of graduate school at Yale School of Drama. And I was always led to believe I would be, you know, I would have a career on the stage. And economics quickly showed me that that was not going to be possible in our country. And I've had the great fortune of doing film, television, and stage throughout the last 35 years. But when my son was young, I knew I wanted to have a more permanent lifestyle as opposed to itinerant, as most actors have. And Liz and Kate, they were friends, and I went to see one of their shows and said, sign me up. I want to be a member of a company. And Liz, as a mother of a son, understood what it was like to raise someone in our business and offered me the opportunity to develop a show with them called Cue the Birdie, which was based on Racine's Phaedra. So I've worked with them over the last 15, 16 years, and this is the record album interpretation. So the itch it scratches is just pure theatrical deliciousness, mm-hmm. is what it is. This particular piece is something they've done before a couple times. We take the album of Early Shaker Spirituals, which is a recorded album from 1976, of five Shaker women, eldresses, singing songs that have been passed down through oral tradition, and we sing Side A. And there are also two monologues, speeches, that two of the women tell stories of their lives as Shakers, and we do those. We have inner ears, microphones that are directly connected to the album. The album is put on a record album on stage, on a stereo turntable on stage. You don't hear it. We are the speakers, basically. We open our mouths and sing as verbatim as possible what we hear in our ear.
The album is Early Shaker Spirituals compilation, Sister R. Mildred Barker and the Sisters of Sabbath Day Lake, Maine. Like you said, the album came out in 1976. The other records that Wooster Group has interpreted in this way were a Hula album and an LSD album.
Exactly.
So when you do this at the Shaker Museum in August, it won't be as many women, though. Is that correct? It'll be you and Suzzy Roach?
Yeah, we're doing, it's not quite acoustic. We're calling it the acoustic version because it's pared down. Mm-hmm. We usually travel with 12. There's five women and four young men, plus actually six young men, plus the director and technicians. But for the gala, it's just going to be Suzzy and I performing two songs and two monologues. And we are beyond excited to actually be in a Shaker built and inspired space and performing what has become to us a really, really profound experience. We all came to it eagerly, but I don't think any of us knew how important it would become to us. None of us have missed one performance. We've traveled all over the world with it. We've been able to come together as a group for the last 3 years to perform this around the world, from Tokyo to Paris to San Francisco to Mount Lebanon. I think that our goal is to see if we can do it until one of us drops over on stage. The Shakers had something that I love. They had an adult-sized cradle that towards the end of people's lives, when they became bedridden, they would rock them to their death. And I would just love to have one of those on stage. So when one of us can't move around anymore, we just put her in the rocker and rock her.
Was working on this piece your first experience with Shaker traditions, and what about their practice and mindset appeals to you as an individual?
Well, you know, this wasn't my introduction. My introduction, I think, probably was through their aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
I've been attracted to and used many of their furniture ideas and their building ideas in different places that I've lived throughout my life. I don't know exactly when I was exposed to it, but it resonated with me immediately. But in terms of the story and the community, I worked with Martha Clark on a workshop of her show Angel Reapers, and she often uses actors to work with her dance company to develop her theatrical narrative in the pieces that she did. And she did one on Mother Ann Lee and the persecution of the Shakers, and that really got me very excited about the philosophy and the theology, but most of the philosophy of life that the Shakers committed themselves to. And I just wasn't done with exploring it as a performer. And I mentioned it to Kate, and she said, well, actually, Liz and I have been listening to this album of Shaker spirituals for the last 30 years, and Liz has always wanted to do something with it. And I said, great, I want to wear a bonnet. And so I'm the only one in the group that gets to wear a bonnet, and I'm very pleased with it.
One of the aspects of the Shaker philosophy is do all your work as if you had 1,000 years to live and as if you knew you must die tomorrow.
Exactly. That would be my philosophy of life as well.
And with a philosophy like that, let me ask this a different way. I don't think that I have a life philosophy. When you have one like that, how do you have to think about it? How do you put it into practice, especially in Hollywood?
Well, I don't live in Hollywood,
right.
and I've rarely worked there. I work in the industry that Hollywood holds. I don't live as a part of it.
Okay.
My life, like I said before, my life has been much more itinerant in terms of being able to and having the great, great good fortune to work in the theater, film, and sometimes in television. I've been able to craft my own professional life. In doing that, it was always based on my personal life first. And I don't think that I began at 23 with that philosophy. I just began crafting a professional life that suited my personal life. And then I think when I heard things like that, when I heard, you know, philosophical statements like Mother Ann Lee's, then I realized, oh, that's what I'm doing. That's what I've been doing. I was raised in a religious background, but this isn't about religion for me. It's much more about the aesthetics of a life, the pace of a life. Another thing that was really, really profound for me in my research was that the Shakers would plant enough in their gardens for the community, for themselves, for the community, to sell for the community, and enough with the knowledge that other people would take what they needed if they needed it. And I always thought that that was a beautiful sentiment as well. It definitely speaks to my socialist tendencies.
Jumping off from that, hopefully not too metaphorically, that what you provide in performing is a kind of food for the people who get to view your work?
Yes, I think so. I mean, it really came together for me that what exactly we've created when we performed in Tokyo, because we went to see some traditional no theater when we were in Tokyo, and it was wonderful to see the way an audience comes. They sit on a very hard bench for hours at a time to watch not much action, a traditional story. They bring their scripts. Sometimes you take a little nap, you fall asleep, you wake up, you're not that far ahead in the story that you can't catch up. There's this kind of meditative quality to the whole experience, and that's how people came to our piece. The lights don't go down in the audience when we perform this. It's more as if we were in a meeting hall and everyone is invited to participate in the experience of being in the room, if not sing along or dance along. But I think that because it is a performance and not, it isn't a religious experience, but theater can be a religious experience. A theater can transport you past your daily life and into a place of meditation, of, you know, a different energy, an excitement, place of imagination that can take you away from your daily troubles or the pressures of the workplace. And I think that that's really how this piece has affected audiences, is that it's a meditation and it's a chance to step outside and go to a quieter place.
Can film do the same thing for the audience or the performer?
It's interesting because I think it's changing really radically right now. I think that a cinema was a building that was meant to hold a group of people that were watching the same thing. And so it has become less and less of a communal experience, but I think it's going back the other way. I think that, for instance, films like Get Out are bringing a wide section, you know, cross-section of a community together in a public place. And though they're all separately watching something, as individuals, it's becoming a collective experience, like a horror film or like a live stage performance. There's nothing like live theater. Film will never be able to rival it as a cathartic experiences for an audience. But I think that people are starting to leave their TV rooms and their living rooms and going back into large film emporiums because it's still a way of communion.
How do you select the projects that you will give your time and energy to?
Sometimes it can be location. I did a job in Spain that was not a very good movie at all, but it was one of the best working experiences I've ever had. Often it's how it fits into my life. Often in film, it's because of the filmmaker, because I believe that I'm in a service position as an actor, and so I like to know whose vision I'm serving. So more often than not, it's either a script that I believe is really well written or a director who has a vision that I want to support. When it comes to theater, now it's about working with the group, working with the Worcester Group. I've done other things. I just did a performance, a production of Macbeth at Berkeley Rep, because I've always wanted to play Lady Macbeth. Had the great good fortune of doing that. I loved playing that character. But so right now it's about what feeds the beast. my lovely beast of needing to continue to learn what it means to be an actor.
Before I let you go, I would like to ask you about the upcoming film Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, written and directed by Martin McDonagh. You star with Woody Harrelson and Sam Rockwell. It's coming out this year sometime. It looks riveting. I love McDonagh's In Bruges and wanted you to, if you don't mind, tell me a little bit about why you decided to do that movie and what about playing Mildred Hayes appealed to you.
Well, I met Martin about 15 years ago. I went to see The Pillow Man, which was one of his plays. It was on Broadway. I had some friends in the production. I met him at the party afterwards. He recognized me from my work and said, you should do one of my plays. You'd be very good in them. And I said, thank you very much. You should write me a role in one of your films. I hear you're going to make films. And then, so 15 years later, he did. He sent me the script about 3 years ago. I was very flattered because it wasn't just a small supporting role. It was, in fact, Mildred Hayes, who is the main protagonist of a very strong ensemble production. I was very flattered and very excited about the script, though said, thank you very much. I wish you had given it to me sooner. I'm too old, because I felt I was too old for the role, because Mildred is the mother of an 18-year-old daughter and a 16-year-old son, and so at 58, I felt that a woman of her socioeconomic background would not be that old and have those children that young. Mm-hmm. And so I said, if you make her their grandmother, I'll sign up. So we had a kind of a rendezvous for about a year where he said, no, you're the mother. And I said, no, I'm too old. And then I just gave over to his belief that I wasn't too old. And we never talked about it again. And it was a really great experience. It's a hell of a movie. Don't know what else to say.
You are playing a tough-as-nails woman with a mission, which is rare in film. Too rare, but seems absolutely perfect. I don't know that I have a question. I guess wanted to enthuse to you about how excited I am to see the film.
Yeah, I hope it starts a conversation of some kind. And, you know, it doesn't really matter what it is to me. I just think I would like it to start a conversation.
Frances McDormand, it will be thrilling to have you at the Shaker Museum in Mount Lebanon in August. And I can't thank you enough for making the time to speak with me today. It's been a real honor.
I love radio.
Thank you very much.
Bye, Sarah.
Frances McDormand will perform an excerpt of the Worcester Group's early Shaker spirituals, a record album interpretation, with Suzy Roach and Kate Valk on August 19th at Shaker Museum Mount Lebanon in New Lebanon, New York. Access to the gala event is available now at sponsorship levels. Individual tickets will go on sale after May 1st. For information, visit shakerml.org. Links to more information are posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.